following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose will be joining us here shortly as well today. We will be discussing real estate private partnership syndications here for the next hour. We're going to pick up with the discussion we started last week, I believe it was, on one of the current offerings that we think is just a hot mess if you look at it, or if you know some of the back story on it. And I had a client that wanted me to take a closer look this week. I'm not sure, maybe they are thinking of investing in it, but I tell you, it's got there's a lot of things that don't appear to have been disclosed based on the history on this set of properties. It's actually a three property transaction, and I don't know. I know the syndication lawyer involved. I know he's a sharp guy. I wonder how much he was told, but maybe that's none of my business. I don't know, except when I've got clients looking at deals, I make a lot of things my business that might not otherwise be, because I don't like surprises, and I especially don't like them when they take advantage of my clients. But in any event, we will pick up on that a little bit later here in the show. I want to remind you that just because you're listening today, or because you go to a website that I may mention, including our own, or perhaps a syndicator's website, that does not make me your accountant, your advisor. Doesn't make NP Ross CPAs your advisor, or Dan DuBose. You assume or presume have advisors currently. You should always run any strategies or any Q&A that we may discuss here past those folks to make sure that whatever the questions and answers are might fit your specific facts and circumstances. But in any event, for those of you that are trying to decide whether to go ahead and jump into the real estate private partnership syndication investment space, maybe you've got some retirement money to invest and you want to do it without, and this is key, without exposing it to taxes or penalty and or penalty first. In most cases, you don't need to do that. Especially if you live here in the great state of Texas and you're married, even if you're not over the magic 59 and a half number that is required by the 401k rules and IRA rules in part to access your money, we can still do that with some strategies we use that involve simply you and your spouse agreeing that you're going to reallocate, repartition current retirement assets from one to the other. In any event, you know, if you want to learn more about that, you know, go to our website, beaplanner.com. It's beaplanner.com. And you can fill out our intake forms. You'll see a link there at the top right. And once you've done that, you can click the link just next to it, schedule a call, and we'll be happy. If you don't have current advisors, or if you don't have advisors that understand the intersection of real estate tax rules with retirement funds and real estate private partnerships and zero tax mass strategies, by all means, we'll be happy to talk with you once you give us the information. Well, Sleeping Beauty, I think, has showed up. Dan, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you.
You know, we had a interesting show yesterday, or at least I'm told it was, by some of our listeners. Had more than a few email opt-ins throughout the show, and I think again the rush into hard assets continues as people look at what their options are. And I think something we need to spend a little time on today is the issue of whether you put your money into syndications, or perhaps you go the single family route. I've got several clients that have asked me recently what would be the most advantageous, and I don't know. You know, I guess we'll debate the metrics or the merits and the metrics a bit of that when we come back from the first break. But in any event, boy, there's some big changes afoot. I don't think I mentioned it on the show a week ago. I had that article queued up and somehow went past it. But Dan, I had an article, again, I saw it sometime within the last 2 weeks, that indicated that in Bexar County, that's San Antonio, that's where my properties are. Would you like to guess what percentage, and if I already talked about this, then maybe you know, but do you have any idea the percentage of single-family closings that were undertaken for the month of May that involved a private equity buyer? You know, one of the big boys, BlackRock, or I don't know who else is still in that space. Apollo, I believe, is, and several others. But just curious, do you know what that number is?
You talking about just in Bexar County?
Just in Bexar County. And that's, I'm not saying it's number one. I'm just saying, hey, I subscribe to the Assorted, you know, the Business Journal over there. I subscribe to the Express News. It's the Chronicle counterpart. And it was probably in one of those two sources. I'm pretty sure it had to have been. But just
20%.
In Bexar County. How much?
20%.
Oh, no, you'd be way under, my friend. 46%.
Wow.
46%. And I say, you know, I hope I'm not misstating that to be private equity as opposed to investors. It's clearly investors, and I'm pretty sure the big boys, so to speak, were those two. But that's pretty telling. I mean, that shows you a little bit of the difficulty for why people are having a hard time buying, you know, that first home or even the, you know, eighth home, right? So anyway, and there's a lot going on in Bexar County. I don't know, this is not on really on topic today, but you're old enough, as am I, to remember the DeLorean Motor Company, right? From way back when?
The sports car?
The DeLorean. You remember that spaceship-looking car,
yeah.
Sports car? Yeah, well, that's been resurrected. And where else but San Antonio is the headquarters of that? It's, you know, taking root right there in San Antonio. It's hard to believe. And they're saying the new coupe, the Alpha 5, will go on sale in 2024. That's crazy. And in any event, I don't know. I guess, you know, I forget, was it P.T. Barnum that said there was a sucker born every minute? I can't remember. Somebody said that. But
we can go back to the future with a DeLorean now.
Well, that's right. I guess that kind of kept the fires stoked there. In any event, let's see. I guess we've come up to the first break. Let's go ahead and take the first break, and then when we come back, let's take a look a little bit deeper at that transaction that we were talking about a week ago. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose.
Eyes on a wind, no matter how much I long. Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
There wasn't nothing but a heartache in the middle of a bad dream. Like I took on the whole world and I never had a chance, girl. Lord, I tried to be forgiving, but getting by don't mean you're living. And on that highway going nowhere was an exit overdue.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose. And Dan, the transaction we started talking about last week, it's a three-property combination. The names have changed to protect the innocent, I suppose, or to make this thing go down a little bit easier. I can't think of the song. There's a song about that, if I remember correctly. But in any event, the names may have changed, but the sad story is still the same. And I'm amazed in looking at the private placement memorandum that, again, this is a redo of a redo, basically. It's the third time this transaction has sought to raise money. The first two times, they actually finally got the money raised. And on the second attempt, it was billed by the syndicator as the most incredible multifamily project that she had ever seen. And I didn't quite understand that, because I'd already seen it once when she first brought it out, and I guess it was as incredible, maybe more so, the second time around, even though I didn't really see much difference. And now the third time around, to me, the thing that's most incredible about it is the fees that have been heaped on this thing. And trying to pass off, under the guise of why you should invest, the notion that what was the equity multiple on this thing? It was anemic. If I remember right, over 5 years, it's like 1.6, somewhere in there. It's about 63% of what we seek generally when we're looking at these transactions. And the NOI is still not where it was projected to be based on the original capital raise, or the second capital raise, the one that actually succeeded. And still doesn't have the NOI up where it was projected. Your occupancies, the equity multiple is targeted at 1.76. That's over 5 years, and that's anemic. I mean, again, we look for 0.0463 per month, and so if you were doing a 60-month equity multiple, let's see here, 0.0463 times 60, you would be looking for at least a 2.778, so you're well under two-thirds mark on what you would seek if you're trying to double your money every 3.6 years. It's a 20% compounded ROI, and One of these properties is shown to be 91% occupied, so there's not a lot of maneuverability there on the top line rents, unless you're just going to jack, the rents. But I guess the real telling sign here is if you look at what they hope to sell it for. Dan, did you look at this transaction yet? I know I kind of sprung it on you
last minute. No, I haven't seen it, Nathan. Sorry.
Well, that's okay. Here's just shows you what kind of uphill battle is being waged here. The purchase price is somewhere in the 14, I believe it's 14 and a half million, somewhere in the 14 plus million, certainly less than 15. And the target sales price in 5 years is at least 25%. I believe it's a little over 25%. Higher, 19.8. That's, and that's sailing into the headwinds that we are now with inflation, et cetera. Who knows? Maybe inflation is going to be in large measure how they get to that sales price. I don't know, but I would just tell you it's pretty ambitious. And when you look at the fact that this isn't the first rodeo for these group or for this group. By the way, I just found the purchase price is $15,375,000. I said it was less than 15. I stand corrected. So you're looking at a four and a half million dollar increase in value over 5 years. And again, you've got properties that are, one of them was 91%, and then we had one that was 85%. And let's see, is the third one mentioned here? Or 86. So let's see, 86, 91. I don't see the occupancy on the third one. Maybe it's in here, but I'm missing it. But it's 85. So there was one that was 85. So 85, 86, 91, and so, there's going to be a lot of rent raises, I presume, to get to those numbers. And we're talking some really mature buildings, 1964, 1962. These things are almost as old as I am, Dan. And 1973. Okay, there's a young one. But anyway, the thing that I find just truly remarkable, and again, I may have missed it, I don't try to memorize these private placement memorandums, but I see no discussion of what's already happened. I see discussions about conflicts, saying that the manager will be paid fees and has certain conflicts. And I'm a little bit, I know that the attorney involved, one, is a credible guy. I know he does a lot of this work. I know he does a lot of this work fast. And I can't fathom that there's not some type of disclosure about, one, how this syndicator is negotiating on behalf of the current group of partners, which I think is a huge conflict and potential liability. And also, there's no independent, or at least they disclaim it, that there's nobody representing the seller in terms of the separate legal work that's independent, which, that's a big deal. And then the fact that you've just got the fees are an obvious conflict. By the way, the fees, most of them did not exist in the first rendition of this project. The obligatory property management and asset management exist, but we're talking about acquisition fees, and I think there's a refinance fee and likely a disposition fee. I'm pretty sure. Well, actually, I know there's a refinance fee, 1% of the new loan amount, a disposition fee, 1% of the sales price. Asset management fee is the obligatory 2%. Property management fee, I get a kick out of this specific syndicator. I've looked at quite a few of her transactions. And she never says how much the property management fee is going to be as a percentage of rents. It's always simply commensurate with local rates. Well, I find that a little bit well, it's just not transparent. When you already own a property and you already know what the management fees have been or are going to be, I would think as you're at least now that you're into the capital raise, wouldn't you think, Dan, that you could peg a property management fee? It's like I'm not sure what the issue is there. I'm just curious. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, maybe they're not high enough. They're trying to get them up higher.
Well, I have a feeling it's going to be managed in-house, let's say. Or no, it's not. I'm sorry. It says it's going to be paid to a third party. Oh, and then it says the property manager may be an affiliate of the manager. Well, okay. If yeah. that's the case, surely, you and I believe that is the case with this syndicator, well, surely you know what the property management fee is that you're going to charge your partners for managing the property. I don't understand, again, this whole transaction is just kind of, I don't know, it's not as transparent as I would like for it to be. If I found out, if I was somebody getting ready to invest money in this transaction and then I found out that it had already failed and moreover that the party that was charged with making it succeed was now, you know, in charge of doing it again, and now you've got all these fees laid on top, and I guess I find it distasteful from both perspectives. If I'm the buyer or a partner in that buyer organization, I'm going to be really, of course, I wouldn't even look at a transaction that's got this low of an equity multiple if I were thinking about investing in this deal. And I don't think I have any clients that are seriously considering it. And I know the clients that are in the existing partnership would love to get their money back and move on. I don't think there's any question about that. But I just question whether, you know, again, you're going to get your money back when you look at all the things that are wrong with this transaction. And, of course, you know, we were at a point right when we were ending the show last week where I was starting to talk about here's the problem with the investment platforms and here's the problem if you don't understand a little history about a particular syndicator and you're out here doing this on your own, winging it, and just this one transaction, if somebody puts $100,000 in it, has the potential to either not make anything or to actually lose money because of the non-disclosures. And yet I know that the one of the wealth creation platforms, they talk about wealth in an odd way, is basically promoting this syndicator in this transaction. And if they've disclosed it all round one, they've done it in the context of posturing as a success. And yet if you read all the things that they're going to do here on this capital raise, I mean, the new paradigm, so to speak, this was all mentioned in the private placement memorandum for the first attempt. And it's like, you know, they're high-fiving and patting the syndicator on the back as if it's some sort of success. This is anything but a success. This is a lifeline. They're throwing a life raft into the ocean trying to save this thing. And yet for new members that have paid, you know, $20,000 supposedly to get the benefit of a platform that vets the syndicators. I was told that the gentleman running this wealth platform about a month or so ago looked over at a wall with pictures of all the syndicators that are involved and said, you know, that he's vetted every one of them, that they would have no reservations instructing you or suggesting you invest with these syndicators. And I'm telling you, I do. You know, if you'd be happy to have that discussion with me, I could tell you things about almost every one of them, not all, but you know, many of them, that you don't know, that if you only knew, you would think differently about the platform, and then you would think much differently about the syndicator. And yet there are good ones on that platform. I've mentioned once before that Macan Investment Group, Medina Sheikh, he's presented his projects through this platform. And there are a couple others that have come through that are doing smallish transactions that are credible. But I tell you what, when you look at the big transactions, aside from Medina's, it's dicey. There's some choppy waters there. And then you lay on the inflation and the debt. I think we're entering I don't want to call it a debt crisis, but it certainly has the potential to get there, Dan. I don't know if you're watching what's going on with, you know, the terms. I saw, you know, there's more and more prepayment penalties going out on these deals that have the bridge and other debt. And, you know, when you look at defeasance and assorted other prepayment penalties, boy, they got you going or coming. I mean, if you don't commit to some of these fees and you just go with a variable loan, you may get whacked that away. And then if you go ahead and try to lock the rate for a period, you may get hit with the inability to refinance, you know. And I don't know. I mean, Dan, you've been around a long time like I have. We've all seen this stuff before. And it's the only thing that's you know, really new is that it is coming on top of this level of inflation. I don't know. The last time inflation was anywhere near like this, I was still at University of Houston taking finance and accounting classes. I wasn't in the quote real world, but you
were about the book inflation back then. So.
Well, you know, it was the one comment I remember my financial markets professor make was, you know, there's no reason for a CEO to get out of bed when the prime rate is, you know, knocking on 20%. I think it got up to 20, or maybe it was 19 at the end of the day. But in any event. Well, listen, let's think we're at a second break opportunity. Let's go ahead and take that break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about some of the current goings-on here in the market. We'll be right back with the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show.
In the shelter of your care each day.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Dude from Houston. When I got them North Texas blues, thought I'd pay all my dues. When them South Texas blues told me, son, you ain't true. And them East Texas blues, and them West Texas too. I done all I know to do, trying to lose. Trying to
Okay, welcome back to this week's third segment of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose, CPA. And Dan, switching gears for a moment, I thought it was an interesting discussion that our president, Joe Biden, had this week. I don't know, did you see his comments about Exxon and their earnings report? Just curious.
No, I didn't, and I usually listen to that stuff quite closely, but I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, this is on Bloomberg, and let's see, what date was this? Looks like it was yesterday, I guess, on the 11th. Here's the title, quote, Exxon made more money than God. Biden rips high gas prices. Average U.S. price gasoline is a penny under the $5 level. Said Biden says oil companies buy back stock instead of drilling. Well, you know, be careful what you wish for is what I would suggest. In any event, I want to let's just break down some of the logic here, right? First of all, you know, Exxon's profits, well, let's see, let's go back to what were they a year ago. That's here further in the article. They're projected this year to be, let's see, it was 40 some odd million. It's a lot of money, but they hardly had any profit. Let's see, Exxon's profits are forecast to almost double to $43 billion this year, which would be its second best performance on record. So I guess they were about 20, 21, 22 a year ago, but it was the year before that. I don't think they had much of a positive, if anything. But, you know, how would you like a company to operate in Exxon's shoes? I mean, you know, they've been whipsawed between the government, you know, punching at them, and then, you know, inflation, which is really government-related here, and then, of course, you know, the world markets have changed. But in spite of all that, Exxon expects to increase production. This is a quote now, the article. Exxon expects to increase production from the Permian Basin, the largest U.S. oil field, by 25% this year, and has plans to increase refining capacity by about 250,000 barrels per day. That's the equivalent of adding a new medium-sized refinery. Oh, here it is. 2020, the company reported losses of more than $20 billion in 2020 and borrowed heavily to support production. So, you know, here's a guy that's never signed the front side of a check, truly, in his life. I say that. Who knows what he and his son have gotten together on, but that's something to be determined. But, you know, I mean, Dan, the tax rules are supposed to be there in the thick and the thin, right? I mean, I don't see provisions that necessarily say that, you know, you only get to claim. I mean, I know there's some exceptions to the rules, but very generally, there's a set of rules that you got to follow whether you're losing money or making money, and it appears to me, I mean, Exxon's not devoid of good tax planning and you know, tax accountants and tax lawyers, et cetera. But, you know, if they're willing to pay taxes, by the way, taxes is disclosed on their income statement. And I understand there's significant book tax differences. You want to take a shot at what it was for 2021, not 2022, but for 2021?
The tax rate?
The amount. You won't guess it. It's much too high.
$6 billion.
Yeah, 40.6 is the number that's on the financial statement now, or the income statement. Now, you know, again, we former Big Eight guys understand there's a big difference between, you know, book taxable income and you know, perhaps taxable income. That's what the I guess at least on a 1065 and on an 1120S. I haven't done a C-Corp return in forever, but there's a section there to reconcile that. And who knows how much of that difference will become recognizable at some point. But I suspect it all does. I haven't seen studies to that effect.
Some point. But, you know, Exxon is there for the long, long, long haul. So, you know, it has been a very productive company and still is. Certainly good for this Gulf Coast region of Texas. It's been a very valuable asset to us, no doubt.
Yeah, it is. You know, speaking of the Gulf Coast region and this syndication that we were just talking about, I saw a statistic. Of course, you know, this syndicator is trying to make the Houston area sound like, you know, God's gift to America. And, you know, and in many ways it is. But would you like to guess what, and I don't know, I mean, I'm sure somewhere, you know, this showed up. Let's see, where is this statement? The question is, what percentage, I believe I'm saying it right, it would be of the economy in Houston is related to oil and gas. You want to take a stab at that, Mr. DeBose?
75%.
Well, you know, I don't know that it would be 75%, but I'm sure betting it'd be higher than 2.7, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. And the caption is, Houston was once an oil and gas town, but no longer. Are you kidding me? If you're going to say things like that, I think you might understand why I'm questioning some of the other things that are mentioned and not mentioned more specifically in this syndication. I just find that this whole thing seems to me to be a bit odd. And when you say that leisure and hospitality, 10.7. I'm just going to call out some of the highlights here. Let's see, trade. I'm not sure what trade. Oh, I guess telecommunications, maybe it's some typo here. And utilities, that's 19.9%. I don't think there's any way. I don't know what we're calling oil and gas. I don't know what makes an oil and gas town. But this, I don't know. This to me is a bit
distorted
out there. It's just out there. Yeah, distorted would be a good word. In any event, but you know, more importantly, just the financial metrics. You know, when you look at, you know, the equity multiple involved, you know, versus what we know we can get in other transactions, I don't see how anyone would seriously consider this transaction. And I guess I want to keep harping on that, because I'll promise you, within the sound of my voice, there are probably people that will invest in transaction like this, if not this one, because they don't understand, you know, how to analyze and how to rank. If they got three or four deals they're looking at, how to rank, you know, which ones are more pleasing than others. But anyway, we'll get off this one. I think we've beat on this enough, and I know, you know, I had quite a few calls from last week confirming, you know, who they already thought that's who it was. They knew who it was, and they can't believe that the platform has not done a better job about educating the membership on the history of this transaction. But in any event, happy to talk more about it with you one-on-one if you really feel like you need to know more. But I would say get the documents from the syndicator and obviously direct your questions to her and her staff, because those should be some creative answers, much more so than mine are going to be, I can assure you. But in any event, Dan, I was curious if let's see, we were talking about on yesterday's show, there were a couple things that we mentioned, and the deficit and the concept of when we run out of money was something we were talking about. And Well, it's not just Social Security, but you know, The CBO analysis, which we talked about last week on both shows, I did a little more digging on that those stats about what the tax rates will have to double to. And, you know, the more I dug, it got a little bit worse and a little bit worse. And, you know, I felt like I was sawing a circular a circle around where I was standing. You know, there, I had to get outside the circle so I wouldn't get hurt. But in any event, that study was part of a response. Let's see. The Congressional Budget Office prepared the attached analysis of the potential economic effects of allowing federal debt to climb as projected under the alternative fiscal scenario presented in the CBO's, now get this, long-term budget outlook of December 2007. So those tax bracket projections that we're saying would be necessary, we're saying CBO, Congressional Budget Office, is saying, you know, the umpire on all legislation, that we're going to, you know, raise the lowest rate at that time, I guess, was 10%, perhaps, up to 25, and then the second tier was going to be from 25 up to 63. That would be where most of our clients are probably situated. And then the highest bracket, 35, would go up to 88. But anyway, here's the bad news. The bad news is this was back in 2007 was the date of that report, when the point that, let me get this in front of me here, the point that the federal debt as a percentage of gross domestic product, that's GDP, it's a very common measure, would go over 100%. So in other words, the federal debt would exceed the GDP, was out in 2000, let's see, what is it here, 2030, or 35 maybe. Or wait a minute, let me think. Yeah, no, that's right, 2035. So the reality is for 2021, we discussed this yesterday. Dan, you remember the number of what percent we were at for 2021? It was like 130-something, wasn't it? 137, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
130, yes.
Yeah, so we're already, you know, what I'm trying to suggest to you is the brackets that were projected or said by a CBO that, hey, this is what you need to make them. This is back in 2007 was the date of the report. It's even worse. I mean, we're significantly ahead of the schedule. And that's why, again, we keep saying 2029, 2030 is when, you know, the problems turn into a depression type problem that will have to be dealt with because you can't pay the interest on the debt. Okay, let's take our last break. And when we come back, there's a couple other news items that affect multifamily and single family investment that I wanted to mention as we wrap up. We'll be right back with the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose, CPAs.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. Nathan@npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
The song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I wanna be. Big dreams and big dreams. And there are many just like me
with big dreams and big dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of the Be a Planner Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose is joining me once again today as well. Let's see, I had an article that was talking about the, I don't want to misstate this. Let me get on the right page. The multifamily strength is still significant based on what's going on in the market. And this article goes back a couple weeks. But the thing that, looking at just the transaction count, there were nearly $290 billion of transactions logged in 2021, more than double the total from 2020. And I guess the thing that concerned me when you're looking at single family versus multifamily, and Dan, I don't know, you've probably got an opinion and I want to give you a chance to chime in here as well. But if, you look at how the two types of properties trade, on the market, let's start with single family because that's what most people are familiar with. You're going to sell your home no matter how well it may be a rental property, maybe the property you live in. You're going to sell it based on what your neighbor around the corner sold their home for, 2 months ago or 2 weeks ago, as the case may be, right? There's a cap. And I don't care how well you run it. If it's a rental property, doesn't matter because NOI isn't the metric that's used to sell a single family, as opposed to the multifamily property. And I would suggest that since net operating income, it's not based on a comp, it's based on the net operating income stream that you've been able to accomplish. That's what dictates, that's part of the equation. The rest of it involves a cap rate, capitalization rate that an investor would require or a bank would require a lender. And I would suggest that that metric is easier to see. It's easier to push, easier to make a turnaround than affecting the comp of a big area of single family. Have you given that some thought, Dan? Because this is, we're coming into an area where I think you've got to really look hard at that if you're trying to decide, do I deploy my money in single family or do I deploy it in multifamily? And then there's some other issues. I'm going to hold off going into those. But generally, what are your thoughts on that?
This week I heard on the news the home builders, the big home builders, are getting into building single family homes just for rental properties.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all part of what I mentioned earlier, the rush by private equity to buy
yes,
those.
Exactly.
You know,
private equity as well as the big publicly owned home builders, you know, building.
Yeah, true.
For
true.
Rental.
Yeah. As an aside,
one of them announced a 1,600 unit project that's all rental. Now, that sounds
who
like
did?
A slum
who did
building
that?
To me.
Yeah, who did you say announced that?
That was on CNBC, and I can't remember the home builder. But it was
speaking of, these aren't being built for rental, but I find it somewhat remarkable that Toll Brothers, you know, one of the larger builders, is building homes out in Spring that I think, if I read the range pricing, was from 500 to over $1 million in sales price. I'm pretty sure I read that correctly, but don't take my word for it before you sign the contract. Read it carefully. But in any event, that's right here in the teeth of massive inflation. It's amazing to me how at least that segment of the market is still resilient. It's almost as if people have forgotten about, yeah, a lot of people lost their jobs, you know, 2 years ago. And I guess a lot of people have gone back to work at a lot higher salary, too, based on what you read. But in any event, so if you're looking at single family versus multifamily, you've also got the ability, theoretically, if you, on both fronts, I guess, if you keep your powder dry and kind of sit on the sidelines, if history's any notion, you may be able to pick up single-family assets and multifamily assets that give you a head start on recovery. But, again, I, you know, the single-family market to me is a little bit more, it's disjointed compared to multifamily. And, you know, when you look at inflation, it would seem to me to indicate that people are going to, yeah, the apartment market's an easier rental game, I think, than single family with inflation in full swing. But I don't know. Well, listen, we're coming up on, I think we've got a minute left. My producer's whispering in my ear, so I guess we'll draw it to a close. We appreciate you tuning in this week. We'll be back Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time for more of the Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan and Dan. I hope you can join us again next week. Thanks for coming on today.
You bet. Thank you, Nathan.
Okay. We look forward to next Saturday at 5 p.m. right here on KSEV AM 700.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.